Here than I thought there would be this cold morning. So thank you for being here. My message this morning is entitled The Authenticity Driven Life. So one of the most widely read Christian books over the last few decades is a book by Rick Warren, founder of the megachurch Saddleback, called The Purpose Driven Life. You're probably familiar with it. Now, it's interesting being a minister because every time a book or a movie or really just about anything that makes a big splash in popular culture happens, people want to know what you think about it. Now, over time, it's become clear to me that there are two prominent reasons, predominant reasons for them asking. Some are actually interested in the opinion of someone who spends their life looking at Scripture and has the education to do so in a fairly informed way. Others simply want to use your answer against you as fodder. Now, the purpose-driven life is an example of just this thing. When I was first getting into ministry, I was actually asked the question a lot, what do you think about the purpose-driven life? Well, back then, my answer was pretty well rehearsed. I would say, well, I can completely see why so many people like it and find it helpful in their spiritual life. It wasn't exactly a false answer, but it was carefully designed to not endorse the book. It was also designed to not completely trash the book either. The answer was designed to not really say anything of much substance. Now, the reason I did that, not only with the question about Rick Warren's book, but with questions about other popular Christian stuff, well, it was probably the fear of people's reaction. I mean, truthfully, I may have tried to justify it at the time as just simply being good pastoral care. But if I were honest about it, it was all fear. Fear that people would be mad at me. Fear that people would talk about me. Fear that people would judge me not as good enough to be minister. Fear that I'd lose some respect from some people. So for the sake of appearance, I'd say what needed to be said in order to maintain my proper position in their eyes. You know, spiritual perspectives around the world often warn us about maintaining false pretenses for the sake of being liked, or some might call it receiving respect, for being important, or as some have said, having a place of honor, or three, for the purpose of being perceived as something we are not, or to put it more of a little differently, for the sake of appearances. Well, given that, what can we learn in terms of our day-to-day lives? What can it tell us about what our lives look like if we strive to follow a more spiritual life? Well, from what I can see, the answer is actually pretty simple. We should lead our lives more authentically. If we wish to live a more healthy spiritual life, if we want to be as full and positive as possible, we should work diligently towards not presenting false fronts, not for the sake of being liked, not for the sake of being important, not even for the sake of earning people's respect. The reality is that kind of life is a lie. That kind of life is a life of manipulation. It's ultimately not sustainable, but more importantly, it's antithetical to a healthy spiritual life. Even for folks that we may know who read the Bible a little more literally than any of us would, it's pretty simple in terms of the concept. In their eyes, God made you just the way you are. God loves you just the way you are. Jesus calls us to love each other just the way we love God, which means we're supposed to love people just the way they are. the games that we play in order to have people respect us are not respectable. The falsehoods we put on in order to maintain appearances, well, they mask the truth in ways that hurt everyone involved. The religiosity we work hard to present, well, it would seem that it is the furthest thing from the way we're called to practice spirituality. So, some of you do some sort of spiritual reading every day. Well, if it isn't leading you to a life lived more authentically, it falls miserably short. You serve on multiple church committees. If it isn't leading to a life lived more authentically, it falls miserably short. You give 10% of your income to the church. If it isn't leading you to a life lived more authentically, it falls miserably short. Of course, the Resource Committee and I still thank you for it. What do I mean by authentic? Well, spiritually, I'm talking about a life that takes more seriously the understanding that we are all a reflection of God, of universal love. A life that's a reflection of love. If you're doing spiritual readings because you want to be able to tell friends or to check off a box on your piety list, it isn't authentic. If you're doing it because you are desperate to learn more about universal love and how to share that love with everyone you meet, then that's part of living an authentically driven life. If you serve on multiple committees so that you can control what happens in the church, or so that people in the church will see you being active, or to earn an extra jewel in your heavenly crown, it isn't authentic. If you're doing it because you are humbled by your place in the universe, humbled by the love that has been extended to you throughout your life, and you just want to give thanks by sharing that love with others, then that is part of living an authentically driven life. If you give 10% of your income to the church because it makes you feel better to know that you're tithing, or because you know the elders count the offering and know who's giving what is being given, it isn't authentic. Let me tell you a story, and it's a Jesus story. I'm going to go ahead and let you know ahead of time, those who need a little warning. Once Jesus and his friends were at the temple in Jerusalem, and as he's teaching them about the importance of being authentic, being real, honest, sincere, and an elderly woman, a poor widow, comes to the treasurer and quietly deposit two small coins, each one worth about half a cent. So, as he's teaching them about having a more authentic life, Jesus sees her and sees what she has given, and he praises her for her giving everything that she has. Now, let's just stop and think about that for a minute. Jesus has just praised someone for becoming poor. Now, in our society, which all too frequently looks down on a person for being poor, it's strange enough. But even putting that aside, this turns out to be a fairly odd story. You see, in biblical times, it was not unusual for widows to be forced to have their estates cared for by legal caretakers. After all, in their backwards way of misogynistically seeing things, they were just women. You can't expect them to be capable of taking care of themselves. And just who were these legal caretakers? Well, frequently they were the treasurers and the scribes of the temple who were among the few educated in the town. While they were supposedly caring for the widows, it was a common practice to charge such a hefty fee that it would intentionally lead the widows to foreclosure. the falseness, the lack of authenticity is pretty undeniable, isn't it? So, Jesus looks up. And he praises the widow for giving everything she has left. And in all likelihood, she's giving it to the very people who made her poor. I ask you, what is good about that? Do you really think that Jesus is encouraging his disciples, encouraging us to give up everything that we have? Well, while I very intentionally don't have any idea who gives what to the church, I do know enough about everyone's lifestyle to know that none of us, including myself, actually believe that we should give up everything to lead a healthy spiritual life. So what's really going on here? Well, with Jesus saying the poor widow has put in more than all of those who are contributing to the treasury, we do have to recognize that in some ways he's painting her as the hero of the story. But we must not miss the tragic undertone of the story either. She's both hero and victim. This is the story of a widow calling their bluff. They've driven her down to almost nothing. They undoubtedly, much as some do today, had pronounced that the poor are a drain on society. And she boldly risked all that she has to call to the attention of the pious to the realities of poverty. She gives her last 2 cents. She becomes poverty stricken by giving to those who have made her poor in the first place. And as Jesus is teaching his disciples about living a life of authenticity, he points to her and says, there, did you see that? That is an authentic life. No fear. No fear. Not worried about what people will think or say or do. She put in everything she had to live on. She's now one of the least thought of people in our society. A woman widowed, poverty stricken. Yet I'm telling you, she is better off than all of them. Why would he say that? The scribes have robes and places of importance and plenty of money. She has nothing. She's looked down on. She's homeless, not a dime to her name. How can she be better off? Because money can't buy you happiness, and the ultimate point of life is to find joy in living it. And part of that joy is found in an active and healthy spiritual life. Part of that life is in living an authentic life. Living fully into being the person who you actually are. To not be afraid of where it will put you. What people might think or say about you. But to be real and authentic in everything you do in spite of all those things. And the good news is that the two go hand in hand. You will find that when you surround yourself with people who love you for who you are, when you find a community who takes seriously the call to love your neighbor as yourself, when you celebrate who you truly are, not hiding it, and instead living more fully into it, you will find that God, universal love, humanity, will seem closer than ever before. And in experiencing that, you will also find that you experience more joy, more hope, and more love than ever before. I can think of nothing in this life that I would not give up. Nothing that I would not give up in order to experience that kind of communion with universal love, with the rest of humanity and creation. It all begins with a life that's authentic, that does not fear the judgment of others, that embraces who it is without putting on airs like the scribes, that loves folks for who they are, and finds a larger spiritual life by finding themselves. It's my wish, my hope, my sincerest dream that we will all help each other find that kind of life here together. And we can begin by learning to love each other for exactly who we are.
Yeah, some folks can hear better with a little added amplitude.
And then the statement of faith that authenticity implies, that we believe as people of faith that if we are authentic, if we seek authenticity, that that will connect us with the source of all authenticity and truth, yeah. God and God's good creation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of overcomes what we're all working on all the time, which is our sense of guilt and,
right.
You know, should have and don't do.
Great
all that, which is always present, and reminds us who we are.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate.
Thanks for helping bring it up so well. Appreciate it. Are there others? David?
Thank you. I'm David at Last Check. And I also agree with the previous speaker that you have a good message. And a lot of times it's difficult to be authentic because people don't want to hear you if you're saying something they don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I understand your hesitation when people ask you about the book.
Yeah.
You couldn't say it was a piece of, you know. and I also appreciated your discussion of the widow's mite, because that's something that's one of those head-scratching things for me for a long time.
Absolutely.
And I also, I've been in other churches where that was the favorite talk during pledge time.
Yes, it is, and it shouldn't be.
And there was, the implication was that if the widow can give everything,
why can't you?
Yeah, you need to give more.
Well, so, I can go and rewrite this if that's what you really want to hear. Right.
No, that's okay.
Are there others? Catch one here in the back.
I'm Annie. One of the reasons I like the early service is that you can be authentic. We don't have to be guilted into doing what everybody expects us to do. We actually are a thinking church in that we think things through,
yeah.
and move with that. And I found... In my life, it was almost like a maturing from the child who is told, you have to do this, to an adult who can make a decision and act on their own. It's a much more freeing way to live.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Are there others? Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Gracia. Thank you so much for that message, Mark. It was just powerful. I can remember that message and similar ones being twisted in the church of my experience to the point that I would just leave my checkbook at home so that when they would
further
say, give something, I would say, oops, forgot my checkbook. So. You know, so anyway, I really appreciate that very much. Thank you.
That also reminds me, if y'all don't mind pulling out your checkbooks here for a moment. Are there others?